Please open your Bible to Psalm 137 today. We've been looking at the 587 BC destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians at God's directive. And we know that the survivors of that destruction were exiled to Babylon, and that the first of them arrived in December of that same year. And Ezekiel met them and spoke with them. This psalm is written about that same time, and it is an expression of the feelings of those exilees when they were first trying to find their place in their new homeland, because they'd been told that they needed to adjust and prepare to be here for the long haul. But they're still very upset at everything that's happened to them, this shift, this huge movement from where they grew up to where they're going to grow old. And one of the things that probably happened, which prompted this psalm, is that the people living already in the region that they were moved to wanted to know about their past culture and wanted to hear some of the things that were part of that culture, including the songs. And so this psalm starts with an objection to sharing their past culture in this new place. Psalm 137. By the waters of Babylon, think about the Euphrates River, the Tigris, and all the canals that were part of that whole tributary system. By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. On the willows there, we hung up our lyres. For there our captors required of us songs, and our tormentors mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. So the psalmist says, we hung up our musical instruments on the trees by the rivers, because we didn't want to play them. The people who had brought us into exile wanted us to sing some of the songs of our homeland, but we couldn't do that. Verse 4, how shall we sing He Who Is's song in a foreign land? Now, there's a little bit of irony in that verse, because one of the reasons for the exile is because they were not properly worshiping He Who Is back in Judea. They were desecrating His name in His temple. And so all of that has been removed, and they have been removed. But the idea here is, why should we sing the songs of our culture in the land of our exile? Then they start singing about the land they left. If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. So if I forget the place where I came from, may I forget how to play the lyre. Let my tongue stick to the roof of my mouth. If I do not remember you, if I do not set Jerusalem above my highest joy. You know, we have a saying that absence makes the heart grow fonder. And so this idea of the exilees now wishing that they could get back to Jerusalem is not all that surprising. And actually, we have prophecies that indicate this time out, if you will, of the exile, is going to bring about repentance of sin so that the people will be better prepared to go back and restart their Jewish culture again back in the Promised Land. At this point, the psalm shifts to a psalm of cursing. It's an imprecatory psalm, as we have talked about before. Imprecatory, just a fancy word for talking about putting a curse on someone and talking bad about them because you're angry. And so this is a venting portion of the psalm. Verse 7, "Remember, O he who is against the Edomites, the day of Jerusalem, how they said, lay it bare, down to its foundations." We've seen already a couple of different places in the prophecies that Edom was going to be coming under God's curse because they were cheering on the destruction of Judea and Jerusalem and the temple. And so that gets mentioned here in this psalm. But that judgment is yet future. Verse number 8, "O daughter of Babylon, doomed to be destroyed, blessed shall he be who repays you for what you've done to us." And we also have seen this. People are angry about the Babylonians' role in the destruction and in the exile. And so they vent toward the Babylonians. And God has also said the Babylonians will be judged. They will be taken out by the Persians in the cycle of time as we move forward. But just how angry the people writing this psalm are at this moment can be seen by verse number 9. "Blessed shall he be who takes your little ones and dashes them against the rock." This is a sort of imprecatory psalm which wishes harm against the children of those that did the exiling, did the destruction. And we know that something like this probably happened against the Judeans by the Babylonians whenever there was resistance to the exile itself. So it's basically a prayer, a curse directed toward God as a petition of a curse against Babylonians and Edomites. When we see other imprecatory psalms, we know that they are typically then followed up with, "But not my will, but yours be done." That is, "Whatever you think is best, Lord." It's interesting that this psalm doesn't wrap up that way. So this is an expression of great anger at the situation of being taken to Babylon from Judea amidst great destruction. And we should take it at face value for that and let the Lord deal with the people who prayed it. Now, let's go to Ezekiel chapter 32. This is a historical passage. Starts with a date. In the 12th year, in the 12th month, on the first day of the month, so this would be New Year's Day in the spring of the year end for the Jewish people, in the year of the exile, in the year of the destruction of Jerusalem. The dating is right in the middle of December. No, that's not right. In the middle of February of 586 BC, because the Jewish year overlaps our calendar years that we use. "Son of man, raise a lamentation over the Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and say to him." We know that the Egyptians had been involved in an attempt to stop the Babylonians from coming against Judea and against Jerusalem. And God had slapped them down through the Babylonians because this is all God's judgment. God is taking judgment through the entirety of the Middle East. And Judea gets hit first. Egypt is also going to get whacked by the Babylonians. And so this is one of those passages that predicts that. It continues in the verse, "You consider yourself a lion of the nations, but you're like a dragon in the seas." So Babylon used lions as a symbol of their power. In fact, they used lions with wings because that was a symbol of one of their goddesses, Asherah, or Isis, as the Egyptians would know her. God says, "No, you're not a great big strong lion What you are is you're a great big river monster, a sea monster that's going to be taken down by me. And there was another place that God described Egypt as a sea monster. So this is a continuation of that. Continuing, you burst forth in your rivers, trouble the waters with your feet, and foul their rivers. So you're out there just terrorizing everyone. Verse 3, thus says he who is God, I will throw my net over you with a host of many peoples, and they will haul you up in my dragnet. So God says, I'm going to send a mass of peoples of mixed ethnic backgrounds, which the Babylonians had allies that were involved in all of this military activity with them. So it's a mixed group that's going to be coming against Egypt eventually. I'm going to cast you to the ground on the open field. I will fling you and will cause all the birds of the heavens to settle on you, and I will gorge the beasts of the whole earth with you. The picture here is Egypt is like the great sea monster living in the Nile River. And how do you destroy a river monster or a sea monster? You take it out of the water and you fling it onto the land. And then you let the animals scavenge it. Verse 5, I will strew your flesh upon the mountains and fill the valleys with your carcass. I will drench the land, even the mountains, with your flowing blood, and the ravines will be full of you. When I blot you out, I will cover the heavens and make their stars dark. I will cover the sky with a cloud, and the moon shall not give its light. All the bright lights of heaven I will make dark over you and put darkness on your land, declares he who is God. This language of darkness and disaster is common with a culture-ending event being predicted in Scripture. Now, we are quite used to thinking of it in connection with the ultimate culture-ending event, which is the second coming of Jesus and the final 3.5 years before that, known as the Day of the Lord. But this here has more to do with how Egypt is about to come into a crisis of its own, and the Babylonians are going to be coming in the midst of all of that and cause a lot of trouble and bring a lot of disaster, and it'll all be judgment for their sinful activities over the generations. Verse 9, I will trouble the hearts of many peoples when I bring your destruction among the nations into the countries that you've not known. I will make many peoples appalled at you, and the hair of their kings shall bristle with horror because of you when I brandish my sword before them. They shall tremble every moment, every one for his own life, on the day of your downfall. So the destruction of Egypt, the taking down of what used to be the ancient powerhouse of the lower Middle East, is going to surprise everyone. Verse 11, for thus says he who is God, the sword of the king of Babylon shall come upon you. Very precise, very specific. The Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar, is going to be the one that will be coming soon to the Nile Delta. And you remember when Jeremiah was kidnapped and taken off to the Nile Delta, God had him put some little hidden stones at the palace there at Tapanhes as a marker for where King Nebuchadnezzar's portable throne was going to be placed when he comes into the Nile Delta to cause trouble. Verse 12, I will cause your multitude to fall by the swords of mighty ones, all of them, most ruthless nation. They shall bring to ruin the pride of Egypt, and all its multitude shall perish. I will destroy all its beasts from beside many waters, and no foot of man shall trouble them any more, nor shall the hoof of beasts trouble them. Then I shall make their waters clear and cause their rivers to run like oil, declares he who is God. There's a desolation that's coming. at least a partial depopulation for a period of time is going to happen. It's not detailed very much in the secular histories, but it's predicted quite often in the prophecies that we've been looking at in this time period. The Babylonians were in a habit of taking conquered peoples into exile. So when Nebuchadnezzar takes over the Nile Delta area, it's not going to be surprising at all that he is going to move the population out of there to someplace else. And that's what's being predicted. But what's also being predicted is that that'll be reversed eventually by God. He will bring the Egyptians back. Verse 15, when I make the land of Egypt desolate, and when the land is desolate of all that fills it, when I strike down all that dwell in it, then they will know that I am he who is. And this is the lamentation that shall be chanted. The daughters of the nation shall chant it. Over Egypt, over all her multitude shall they chant it, declares he who is God. So people will be bawling their eyes out and singing sad songs all about the desolation of Egypt that will take place under the Babylonians. Now, a few days later, a couple of weeks later, there is another prophecy that God gives to Ezekiel regarding Egypt. This is verse 17. In the 12th year, in the 12th month, on the 15th day of the month. So now we're in February of 586, the last part of it. And it says here, the word of he who is came to me. Son of man, wail over the multitude of Egypt, and send them down, her and the daughters of majestic nations, to the world below, to those who have gone down into the pit. Now, we've been talking about exile. This is talking about death. Going down into the world below, going down into the pit, that's poetic language about death. So there's going to be a lot of death taking place in Egypt at the hands of the Babylonians very soon. Verse 19, whom do you surpass in beauty? Go down and be laid to rest with the uncircumcised. So God's curse is on Egypt as well, and people are going to die underneath the judgment. They shall fall amid those who were slain by the sword. Egypt is delivered to the sword. Drag her away, and all her multitudes. The mighty chief shall speak of them with their helpers out of the midst of Sheol. Oh, they've come down. They lie still, the uncircumcised, slain by the sword. So the picture here is of the already dead people. Dead, unrighteous people, judged people, apparently. The strong men of ages past that have been under the judgment of God. They're basically in Sheol, the place of the undead spirits, the place of the dead spirits. And these guys are saying, come on down with us. Come on down here. Verse 22, Assyria is there and all her company, its graves all around it, all of them slain, fallen by the sword, whose graves are set in the uttermost parts of the pit. And her company is all around her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword, who spread terror in the land of living. Now, you might remember that Assyria was the last great empire. It took northern Israel into exile, destroyed the city of Samaria, and caused all sorts of havoc over the Middle East. They were the Nazis of that day, but they're now gone. The Babylonians rose up against them in their own country, and then began a campaign to eradicate the Assyrians all over the upper Middle East. The Egyptians very foolishly came to try to help the Assyrians out, and that's what caused a lot of trouble between them and the Babylonians. But the picture here is the Assyrians are already a whole bunch of them dead and in Sheol, and the Egyptians are about to go and join them. At least an awful lot of Egyptians are about to join them. And not just the Egyptians and the Assyrians. Verse 24, Elam is there, and all her multitude around her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword, who went down uncircumcised into the world below, who spread their terror in the land of the living, and they bear their shame with those who go down into the pit. Elam is a region right around Susa that is on the borderland between the Babylonian kingdom area and the Persian and Mede area. And at one time, they'd apparently been involved in some pretty atrocious behavior, and now they have been brought under judgment. And so a whole bunch of the Elamites are dead and in the grave in Sheol. And so they'll be welcoming, so to speak, the dead Egyptians that are coming under the judgment as well. Continuing verse 25, they've made her a bed among the slain with all her multitude, her graves all around it, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword, for terror of them was spread in the land of the living, and they bear their shame with those who go down to the pit. They are placed among the slain. So you can kind of see a theme that's developing here, where nations that have caused trouble in the past have now come under the judgment of God, and many of them are already dead and in Sheol, where the Egyptians are about to go because the judgment's about to fall on them. Verse 26, Meshech Tubal is there. Now, Meshech Tubal is located in what we today call Turkey, probably north-central Turkey, somewhere in that region. And they had also apparently caused trouble and come under the judgment of God, possibly at the hands of the Assyrians first, but it could be that the Babylonians were the ones that came in and took them out. But this is the description, very similar to what we've already seen. All her multitude, her graves all around it, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword, for they spread their terror in the land of the living. And they did not lie with the mighty, the fallen from among the uncircumcised, who went down to Sheol with their weapons of war, whose swords were laid under their heads. Apparently that was a ritual of burial. And whose iniquities are upon their bones, for the terror of the mighty men are in the land of the living. But as for you, you shall be broken and lie among the uncircumcised with those who were slain by the sword. So Egypt, your time's coming, just like Meshech Tubal. Verse 29, Edom is there, her kings and all her princes, who for all their might are laid with those who are killed by the sword. They lie with the uncircumcised, with those who go down to the pit. So judgment has fallen in part on Edom. We're actually going to see some other prophecies about judgment coming against Edom. The princes of the north are there, all of them, and all the Sidonians who have gone down in shame with the slain. So these are places north of the Holy Land, so Tyre, Sidon, Beirut, and the places that are in the western portion of Mesopotamia. These all came under judgment in the past, and their dead are in Sheol. For all the terror that they caused by their might, they lie uncircumcised with those who are slain by the sword and bear their shame with those who go down to the pit. When Pharaoh sees them, he will be comforted for all his multitude. Pharaoh and all his army slain by the sword declares he who is God. Now there's a tongue-in-cheek element to this. Pharaoh, when he is dead and in Sheol, and he has all of his dead soldiers with him and Sheol, he can take comfort in knowing that he's not the first one there. that they're not the first ones there, that there have been plenty before them that were judged by God and sent to Sheol by being killed. And so this is all very poetic way of just saying, Pharaoh, Egypt, you're next under God's judgment. Verse 32, for I spread terror in the land of the living, and he shall be laid to rest among the uncircumcised with those who are slain by the sword. Pharaoh and all his multitude, declares he who is God. So they caused trouble while they were alive, and now God's judgment is going to bring them into death. At this point, we're going to leave our prophets Ezekiel and Jeremiah for a little bit. We've been in there a lot, and go to a little bitty tiny prophet book, the book of Obadiah. Now, we're not going to get very far into it at all today, but I want to kind of introduce it today. Obadiah is stated as being the vision of Obadiah. Now, we don't know exactly who this guy is. His name has something to do with being a servant of Yah, but we do know who it's about. So here it is, verse number one, the vision of Obadiah. Thus says he who is God concerning Edom. So Edom is the country to the southeast of the lower end of the Dead Sea. So they are a near neighbor of the country of Judah. And we know that they have been cheering on the destruction of the country of Judah by the Babylonians, the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, and the destruction of the temple. And so this prophecy is going to be all about how Edom is going to face their own judgment.